This is a download from the Scottish Railway Preservation Society.
Just putting some lights on the engine now. We've got two lights showing it's a passenger train.
This is Soundbox, a magazine for railway enthusiasts around the world, coming to you from Bowness in Scotland.
Well, hello and welcome to Soundblast 15, the Scottish Railway Preservation Society's totally non-visual magazine. And to start this edition off, I'm at a secret location somewhere in Scotland. I'm not at liberty to tell you more, but it is a damp, grey, windy morning, as you can probably hear, and hopefully we're going to gain admission to this secret den. Ah, hello.
Hello.
Julia Stevens, I do believe.
Yes.
And you are the...
Museum director.
The museum director. I shall close the door behind me to keep prying eyes out. Ah, good morning, Julia.
Good morning.
And what have we here?
This is the bits and pieces that we're putting together for our temporary exhibition, which will be in the museum during the 2012 season.
The one thing that catches my eye as a former headmaster is a bell. And would you believe, in the little Episcopal school in Stirling that I used to run, we only had a handbell. Beautiful.
This one's from the North British Railway. And the exhibition focuses around the main five different companies that existed before 1923. So there will be photographs, there will be objects from the stores, and there will also be models of the different locomotives and trains that were used.
And we're going to run over what the five railways were. I see here a badge for Lookout, an arm. Well, you tell me what it is.
So it's a badge that went onto someone's arm. It's only got one bit of its metal.
Of course, you have a very thin arm.
only got one bit left, and it's from the Caledonian Railway.
Which is the CR.
Yes.
The second one gives a clue. It's a tourist programme.
For 1902 Highland Railway tourist programme, via Dunkeld,
says. Inverness, via Dunkeld.
Yep.
And here we have one for To the Coronation in London. With true comfort and true economy. I like that. And that brings in a company which wasn't a Scottish one, but was a Scottish ally, which is the London and North Western.
Yes, that's got Caledonian and London and North Western.
Yes,
so.
And I saw around the back here. Ah, Pilotman.
Glasgow and South Western Pilotman, a nice bright red.
Oh, very bright red. Again, an armband.
Armband.
And there's a...
Lots of tools.
Muckle great spanner around the back here. It's from GNSR, which is the
Great North of Scotland Railway.
And it's a ring spanner.
We also have this Great North of Scotland Railway wages tin, number 160. They used to get their cash in a small tin like this.
Okay, that was number one. No, I think we've still got one missing. There we are. A double-ended spanner.
We have lots of tools, strangely
enough.
Well,
this one is from the
North British Railway. Yes, I think those are the main companies. There's lots of bits and pieces. We have more in the way of paperwork, perhaps, than we do in terms of three-dimensional object.
Now, here, this looks to me like a bit of sacking.
Yes. Caledonian Railway. A sack for the Caledonian Railway.
It is a canvas sack, isn't it?
Yes. We're looking at all the different aspects that the railways ventured into. So it wasn't just the traditional things that you might think of as in terms of railway, but things like tourist programmes and...
List of furnished lodgings, farmhouses, country villages and other places in the district south of the Highland Railway. Well. Sort of very early... Self-catering, presumably.
Yes. Yeah, so there was no shortage of things that they delved into in order to try and attract people to use their services.
Of course.
Lots of buttons as well. Just about every company had... These are North British ones with the crest on them. But nearly all the companies had their own buttons and ties and uniforms, hats, all the different bits and pieces that went along with it.
That one's in need of a bit of buffing up. The Sergeant Major would not be happy with that. Brass, it says, but you wouldn't know what it was. It's rather tarnished with age. Now, Julia, there's quite a selection of things here. Do you have any favourites among them?
I have two favourites. One is this book of rules and regulations, Glasgow and South Western Railways. It talks about things like the station master must take care that immediately on the stopping of each passenger train, the name of the station is called out along the train in a distinct and audible manner, and must pay immediate attention to any indication shown by the passengers of their desire to alight.
Now, I'm going to ask you if you would call out the name of Bowness in a distinct and audible manner.
Bowness! Bowness!
Bravo! And you have another one?
I do. This one here is a silver spoon. Again, Glasgow... Oh, this one's Great North of Scotland spoon. But it gives the impression of the elegance of travelling by railways at that time.
And thank you very much, Julia. Now, when is this exhibition going to go on display?
The museum opens for the season on the 31st of March, and it will be on show all the way through the season until the 28th of October, our last day.
And the museum to which you refer is the Museum of Scottish Railways,
yes,
formerly known as the Scottish Railway Exhibition, and that is in Bowness, close to Bowness Railway Station.
That's right, yes.
Well, now we've come to the Museum of Scottish Railways. I am here to interview this gentleman who is up a ladder. Good morning.
Good morning.
Would you care to come down and tell me what you're doing?
I'll come and join you. Hi there.
Right, good morning. I'm Sandy Simpson, and you are?
Jack Stothard.
Stothard. You must tell me about your name. Stothard?
Stothard. It's an old Scots name. Though I don't sound it.
You don't.
No. But a stot is a Scots word, a lowland Scots word, for a bullock. So we were originally probably bullock herders, stothers. And it's changed over the years, Stothard, and that's where all the stoppards, stockards, stoddarts of Glasgow all come from.
You all came
from. We're the originals.
But you're not here herding bullocks.
Not today.
What are you doing?
Well, I'm here busy painting a toilet wall, but with a difference.
This is the outside of the toilet.
It's the outside of the toilets in the museum, first museum building. And it's just a big, modern block inside the warehouse that is the museum. And it was kind of plain. So we were looking at redecorating this anyway, and Julia, who you've just been talking to, was wondering what to do with it. And I suggested, well, actually, with the doors in the wall, it looks kind of like a railway carriage side. So why don't we paint it to look like a railway carriage? And the idea went on from there, really. And we're kind of getting started now. We've got some of the big blocks of colour on.
Okay.
And it's going to be painted in the carmine and cream, blood and custard colours of the old British Rail Mark I carriages, complete with windows, where the windows would have been between the doors, and a trompe l'oeil through the windows. Now, that's an expression not many people have come across. Have you heard of that?
I would think that is... Oh, what a visual deception.
It's a trick of the eye, that's quite right. And what we're going to be doing is painting the view through the windows as if you can see into the carriage.
Not into the toilet, though.
Not into the toilet. Happily not. But so that you can see into the carriage, and we'll have different characters inside the carriage doing different things, and you'll be able to see the other side of the carriage, the corridor on the other side, and then through the window on the other side into countryside.
Oh, my goodness me.
So it draws your eye through.
Right through.
And makes it look three-dimensional.
Since this is a totally non-visual magazine, I should explain that, in common with toilets many places, there are three doors, which are approximately side-by-side, separated by... with broadly similar to the doors, which is why it can be made to look like the doors in a railway carriage and the windows in between, which is good. Okay, how long do you expect to be on this project?
Well, we started this a couple of weeks ago with taking all the notice boards down, which you can see over here.
Yes,
they're gone.
A little
further down there. Filling all the holes where they came out, and there's badly cracked plaster, so we've been filling that as well. And the first coat of two of the colours, the blue for the sky and the cream for the custard part of the coaches, has gone on. I've just put another coat on of that. Right. It's got to be finished by the opening of the museum for the new season, so I've got till the end of March.
You've got to do it for that, the end of March?
End of March,
yes. That's your deadline.
Is my deadline for that, so we're really having to get a scuttle on now and really move it ahead. So today is the start of some really intensive work to try and get this done.
And since it'll be a wee while before people are able to hear this interview, that gives you just under 5 weeks from the day in which we're speaking.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm full of hope and confidence.
Jack, you must tell me a little bit about what gave you the idea for this and what work you did as background before you actually started with the paintbrush. Well,
the last time I did anything like this was actually my children's bedroom when I renovated an old Victorian house and decided to have a proper nursery. So I painted the whole of the walls in this kind of fashion in a trompe l'oeil with fairy palaces and horses and things, roads leading off into the distance. And I've done one or two small ones, but this is the biggest one I've tackled by far.
And what research did you do
first? I've been on the internet quite a bit and looking at the different styles and the details that will help to make this look more three-dimensional, and also refreshing my memory about how to do single-point perspective work, which is how you make it look three-dimensional.
Right.
And I've had some great help from our paint suppliers who've helped me match the colours as close as we can get them to the old carmine and cream.
I think I remember that one's been called Plum and Spilt Milk, which I suspect...
It's been called all sorts
of things.
I
think the first title for it was Plum and Spilt Milk, was the official name. Mm. And have you any physical help? You've got helping figures?
Well, yes, the regular museum volunteers have been down here. There were nearly a dozen of us a couple of weeks ago making a good start on it. As we get down to the detail, that'll be down to mainly myself and my daughter, who's an artist, and she's going to be coming down to help me with that.
And thank you very much indeed, Jack.
You're very welcome.
Thank you. It is always a pleasure to report that a project has been completed in time, and that is exactly what happened with the rebranded Museum of Scottish Railways. The former Scottish Railway exhibition was given a very thorough spring clean indeed, a spring clean that involved hundreds of hours of toil, albeit toil willingly undertaken by a team of volunteers. Still, toil is toil, and it's greatly to the team's credit that the Museum of Scottish Railways was sparkling for its reopening at the beginning of the 2012 season at the end of March. Well done, gang! And if you haven't been there recently, give yourself a treat and visit the Museum of Scottish Railways on the Bowness and Canal Railway site at Bowness. It's open every day of every week between 11:30 in the morning and 4 in the afternoon. A year-long season ticket costs a mere £4, and accompanied children under the age of 12 are admitted entirely free. Now, while that was going on, Brian Thompson and his fellow steam engineers were hard at work on another project at the opposite end of the site, in the Steamboat Most Workshops, to be precise.
Well, Brian, a few months ago we were down to see how the Fair Maid was getting on. And now we're back again. So, what's been happening in the interval?
We've been having problems getting the Western House pump to run. We've made new runs for it. We've had it running in compressed air. It runs fine in compressed air. As soon as we put it onto steam, it decides not to work. So we're still working away at that. We've got it on a steam test today to check everything else out. And hopefully, within the next month or so, we should have it ready to go.
Now, refresh my memory, where's this engine going to?
It's going on loan to the Fintown Railway in County Donegal, which was on the line over to Glenties. Mm-hmm. It's west of Belfast, quite a bit west of Belfast. They're going to run it.
It's a tourist railway, is it?
It's a tourist railway, yeah. It's about a mile and a half along the side of Loch Fyne.
What's the history of the engine?
It was built in Barclays in 1891 for our contractors. They used it on sites where they could put down lightly laid track, and they would use it for hauling materials around. Eventually became under the ownership of British Oxygen at Foyers, but on the side of Loch Ness, where it lasted out till before the war. It was reboilered in 1938, and it basically hardly steamed after that. It's been on a plinth for 30, 40 years. We took it on repair about 5 years ago, and we're just coming towards the end of that now. Yeah.
It's a narrow gauge engine. Does that
three foot gauge engine, very light. It only weighs about 6.5 tons. So,
is there any difference between driving a narrow gauge engine and a standard gauge?
Yeah, well, normally you do the driving and firing on your own. It's just a one-man job. And you're getting the good sound effects here. That's the right-hand injector picking up, delivering water into the boiler.
All good, healthy sound, is it?
Oh, everything's working so far, apart from this pump.
Right. I'll come back to you later and see if we can see it moving.
Okay.
Thank you.
Cheers, David.
Hello, David. It's Martin Shaw here.
Hello.
Come and have a ride on the engine.
Okay,
first.
Thanks, Rich. I just come up.
Yep. It's a bit tight, isn't it?
It's wee. They were wee in those days.
Right. But it's the same type of basic controls, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, but it's exactly the same as any other railway locomotive. Uh-huh. Handbrake, reverser, regulator, two water gauges, injectors, pressure gauge, safety valves, you know. It's exactly the same as an A4, just a lot weirder.
So what sort of pressure do you run at?
Well, maximum boiler pressure is 150 pounds a square inch, but it'll go at 100 quite happily.
Okay, so
reverser, obviously mid-gear in the middle, two notches forward, two notches backward, which is probably, I guess, around about 80% cut-off and 50% cut-off or something like that. Simple locomotive-style boiler. Grates probably about 2 foot long by 18 inches or so, 2 foot wide, nearly square anyway. Two or three good shovelfuls of coal will cover it. And of course, we haven't really had it out on a long line with a load yet, so we don't really know what sort of consumption the fuel and water might be.
So let's try it. Can you take it?
Yes, we can go forward.
Where's your whistle?
We two on the whistle, sitting up here in the front of the cab. Tug on the regulator. I'll take the handbrake off, that will help. We've only got 60 feet odd of railway here to run this on, so we aren't going to go anywhere in a hurry. But it shoves slightly unevenly backwards, which is obviously something that needs a wee bit of attention. But in the forward direction, it's not too bad at all. Sounds quite tolerable.
You quite happy with it?
I think we're not. Yeah, we're reasonably happy, considering that it was lying outside the museum at Bowness as a hulk, and it's now a working locomotive. Yes, I think we could say we're very happy with it.
Thanks very much indeed.
Okay, no worries.
Time to leave the narrow gauge loco and get back to the real age of steam. I'm Mike Udelic and welcome to my collection of archive steam recordings. The first recording is on 31st March 1967. It's 10:24 p.m. at Stirling Station, and after a 20-minute stop to unload parcels from its 13 vans, Black 5460 number 45437 departs north to Perth. Hissing steam, it momentarily slips and whistles. It passes under Riverside Road Bridge and raises echoes away into the distance as the down main signal returns to danger.
Thank you.
Steamworking was getting scarce in Scotland, but could still be seen at some collieries in Fife. It's 3 p.m. on 4th of April 1967. NCB National Coal Board 040 saddle tank number 42 is still at work. Built in 1912 by Andrew Barclay of Kilmarnock, number 42 is heard shunting heavy wagons of coal at Minto Colliery, Cardenden. It sounds its shrill whistle and moves like engine to set the buffers clanging on empty wagons. At 11:51 p.m. on 10th April 67, Britannia Class 70034 Thomas Hardy departs from Stirling Station. It's hauling the late evening three-coach passenger connection from Carlisle to Perth. The Britannia slips and sounds its distinctive chime whistle as it departs northwards into the darkness. Thanks for being with me. See you next time.
And that pretty well wraps up this edition of Sound Blast. You can contact us online at www.srps.org.uk/soundblast. That's all lowercase. That's www.srps.org.uk/soundblast. Or you can write to us at soundblast, two words this time with initial capitals, soundblast, SRPS, Union Street, Bonest, West Lothian, EH519AQ, Scotland. The editor and producer has been David, by the way, and I'm Sandy Simpson.
And I'm Julia Stephen.
And we wish you all that you wish yourself from everyone here at the Scottish Railway Preservation Society at Bonest in Scotland.